Hello, and welcome to the Legal Checkup, your program on the air with Vince Quattrini, your host, sponsored by the law firm of Quattrini Rafferty, with offices in Greensburg, Pittsburgh, and Latrobe. Today, we're continuing the very interesting conversation with Dr. Louis Catalano, neurologist par excellence of 50 years of practice. Hello again, Dr. Catalano. Nice to be with you.
Thank you very much, Vince. Glad to be here.
And today, we're going to continue our conversation about diagnoses that you see more regularly in the elderly in your practice of neurology. Let's start with a question. Why, if I suspect one of these diagnoses that we're going to talk about, Alzheimer's, epilepsy, dementia, why do I want to come to a neurologist for an evaluation? What is it about your specialty that prepares you for this kind of patient?
Well, first of all, that's what our specialty is. We are trained to diagnose and treat neurological conditions, and at the time that somebody's brought to me, the issue whether they have a neurological condition may not be certain or is uncertain, and what it is, what the name of their condition is, might be important, not just because of a name, but also telling us what the treatment is. So every day I see examples of where somebody might be blamed as having a stroke when they really have myasthenia gravis, or somebody could be just thought to be forgetful when in fact they actually have real Alzheimer's disease. I saw a gentleman today that was thought to have had a stroke when he actually has Parkinson's disease.
Oh, my. So I guess that my next question is, there are enough occasions where the diagnosis just is off by another physician, or maybe that physician didn't have all of the resources or information they need?
Well, I think that's true. I think many times physicians just don't have enough time to actually sit down and analyze all the facts. We're all so busy.
Right.
I mean, everybody's very busy. Needless to say, neurologists are extremely busy because there's so few of us. And we're actually having a epidemic of the elderly right now. We're all getting older. The population in America is getting aged as we go on. I don't know exactly. I'm not a statistics guy, but the number of people going on Social Security within the next few years is going to be enormous. So that indicates the patient's getting older. And so we are talking about the problems of aging today. Those are the kinds of things that neurologists are really, they're expert at.
And you see it daily, all day, right? It helps you with forming the proper diagnosis.
Right. I think there's a lot of expertise involved. I personally think history is always the most valuable part. History from the patient and the family oftentimes. And then examining the patient is important because it may confirm what you're thinking anyway. A lot of neurological diseases also have very characteristic features that our eyes are trained to recognize quite rapidly. And the more experience one has, the better off you are with that too.
Doctor, one of the diagnoses of the elderly that we all know about is Alzheimer's. We talked about it in the last program together. What I didn't get a chance to ask you, is there a difference between the word Alzheimer's disease and dementia? I'm sure there's a crossover, but are those the same, or are there differences?
Okay, well, I guess the top of the paragraph is dementia. That is a generic name for memory loss.
Okay.
So there are a number of causes of dementia, not just Alzheimer's disease, but Alzheimer's disease just happens to be the most common cause.
What are some of the other causes?
Well, the second most common cause of dementia in our population is what we call Lewy body disease. This is actually much more prevalent than was previously recognized.
That sounds like a doctor word to me.
Well, a very famous movie star just died of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Who? Do you remember who?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
maybe a little bit of age-related memory issues here, huh?
Yeah.
We'll go back to that.
Anyway, he has Lewy body disease.
What is that?
I didn't want to go into his clinical issue. Lewy body disease is characterized by progressive memory deterioration. It very typically begins with hallucinations.
Oh, my.
So the patients frequently have visual hallucinations. I had a patient that was brought a few years ago where their mother was all of a sudden started seeing people in the living room while sitting on the couch. She had been perfectly normal, up to that point.
Yeah.
And the hallucinations became progressively worse.
We're talking today, with Dr. Louis Catalano, a neurologist in the Westmoreland County area. You're listening to The Legal Checkup, in case you just tuned in. This is your host, Vince Quattrini. Dr. Catalano and I are continuing our conversation of diseases that he sees most prevalently in the elderly. What are any of the other causes of dementia?
Okay. But I do want to tell you that I guess that tells out of school, but Robin Williams had Lewy body disease.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that is well established. Autopsy proved, so that actually is a fact. Other causes of memory loss or dementia can be lots of strokes. We call it multi-infarction dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Usually a single stroke won't cause a dementia, but loss of brain tissue on both sides of the brain with multiple strokes over time can be a very important cause of dementia. And there's some evidence that that actually aggravates Alzheimer's disease, if you know what I mean. That can be one of the risk factors for making Alzheimer's disease more of a problem for some people. It accelerates the progression of Alzheimer's disease.
How about Parkinson's disease? Is that something that you're seeing prevalently?
Very common. About 2-3% of the population past 60 develops Parkinson's disease.
What is that?
True Parkinson's disease, which is a technical name, is called idiopathic paralysis agitans. But true Parkinson's disease is due to a loss of the wiring system in the brain, a special pattern of wiring that controls our movements. It's considered to be a neurodegenerative disease. It involves certain hookups or wiring in the brain that deteriorates. Certain cells start getting sick for reasons we don't quite understand. We do know there's a genetic component.
There is a genetic component?
Yes. There's about, We think there's about 20 genes that cause Parkinson's, of which 10 are identified and 2 are very strong risk factors.
So, geneticists, is this a subject that we should be talking about in terms of these elderly diseases? Should I be at a young age going to see a geneticist to see whether I have a higher risk factor for Parkinson's or Alzheimer's?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer is that all the genes are not completely identified yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're still weighing out which ones are the more important ones for certain patients. We definitely know what some of the important genes are, though. The issue has been that the federal government doesn't pay for these tests and doesn't allow the insurance companies to pay for the tests because they are felt at the present time not to enhance the treatment of the patient. So we may be able to identify what gene caused it, but it's not yet presently telling us a better treatment.
So it sounds like this prevention versus treatment approach to a problem. I'm worried about preventing it, and you're saying that there still is not reimbursement for a lot of preventive tests and more. You have to have the disease first before you can get a doctor to get paid for treating it.
Well, before, even worse, the type of genetic testing we're talking about, which are risk factors for these two diseases, for example, are not reimbursable at the present time.
No kidding.
Right. They are not. The government construes it that these genes, identifying these genes in patients or in patients at risk, families, I'll say family members at risk, are not helpful in terms of treating the patient.
We're going to take a break here. We're talking with Dr. Louis Catalano again today. You're listening to The Legal Checkup, and I'm your host, Vince Quattrini. Our law firm can be reached at QuattriniRaffertyLegal.com or QRLegal.com, and we'll be back in a few moments to continue learning more about the diseases of the elderly with Dr. Louis Catalano. Welcome back. You're listening to The Legal Checkup, and this is your host, Vince Quattrini, and we're continuing our scintillating conversation with Louis Catalano, a doctor of neurology who has spent 50 years in the diagnosis of patients with neurologic problems. And what I'd like to do during this segment, doctor, is talk about the social consequences of these dramatic diseases in the elderly. You've told me about what you experience more as the counselor in your capacity instead of the physician with a treatment plan. Some of the social consequences that you see daily in elderly patients.
Well, this is becoming, again, an extremely difficult and frequent problem that neurologists are having to deal with, as the entire medical profession is. But for us, it's almost overwhelming, too. A good example would be somebody who has progressive memory loss, whether it be Alzheimer's or other causes.
Mm-hmm.
But when they become incapacitated or disabled from their memory loss, Where do you draw the line? Where's the red line for driving, for getting help in the home?
Continuing to live alone.
Exactly right. Living alone, of course, is a desperate situation. The one of the interesting statistics is the highest suicide rate is in elderly men.
Oh, my.
And the reason for that is they don't have any support. Their family's gone. They just get desperate because they're not able to get any assistance for their condition.
Hmm.
So that it's a tragic circumstance.
Talk about having to tell your patient or your patient's relatives that that person cannot drive anymore. That must be a very difficult conversation.
Well, it's a horrible situation. For many elderly families, the wife does not drive. I pointed out earlier when we were talking that women in their 70s and 80s and so forth may have never learned to drive.
No kidding. There's still
a number of elderly women
who never had a license.
Never had a license. My own mother never had a license.
Huh. Yeah.
So that's made the husband the not just the old breadwinner, but still the method of mode of transportation, going
sure.
to the grocery store, going to the doctor.
Going to church.
So it's not the little old lady driving a car to church syndrome, as we think, but it's actually the little old man. And when he gets incapacitated, it's devastating because there may not be anybody else in the family to help out. In today's world, the kids, one might be in California, one's in Denver, and the other one's in Florida. So nobody's home.
Wow.
I see this every day when somebody gets very sick in the hospital and the child is out in California.
Am I?
It happens daily.
And so this conversation, Mr. Smith, I got to tell you that you can't drive anymore. What do you have to do when you, as the neurologist, have made that medical decision? Do you have an obligation to report that?
The answer to that, Vince, is yes.
Yeah.
There is a law in Pennsylvania that any type of neurological incapacitation, if you will, is a reportable disease or reportable to the driving bureau.
And that would cross not only Alzheimer's, but epilepsy, stroke, where you feel that the person is incapacitated at the present time?
Yes, for certain. And the reason is it's not necessarily for the safety of the patient, but it's for the safety of the public. So the public is at risk for somebody driving that's not having all their faculties.
And so maybe what the takeaway from this conversation for our listeners is that, you know, they need to be prepared to know that when this medical diagnosis is confirmed by you, that you are legally obligated to follow through, because I imagine you get considerable pushback from the family.
Yeah, tremendous. Actually, and I was going to say, I get a lot of pushback from the patient.
Sure.
You know, the average guy's been driving since he was 14 or 15, much less 16, and now they're 90. I still have people driving to my office that are in their early to mid-90s, by the way.
Been in the emotional toll on a 90-year-old male must be substantial.
Yes, I consider that to be a major life crisis.
So talk about other social consequences that you have conversations with patients and family members about in your daily practice.
Well, two things come to mind. Number one is the person living alone. There may not be a family. One of the things that I'll see is, well, my neighbor checks on me. But you understand, of course, that that neighbor isn't biologically related, and they're interest and availability is stretched to help this elderly person.
Excuse me, doctor. Yeah, sure. I hate to interrupt you, but I want to just, the listener just tuning in, let them know that this is Vince Quattrini talking today with Dr. Louis Catalano on problems of the elderly on your program, The Legal Checkup. Sorry for interrupting, doctor, and you're continuing to talk about
living we're talking alone. About the individual being alone and not having any resources, and this is a horrible problem.
Mm.
It's actually often life threatening, because if they have any type of fall or stroke or other event that incapacitates them, they can lay on the floor for 2 to 3 days before they're found, and this is not unusual.
So, do you have any suggestions for the listener about family members who live alone? Are there resources that you recommend to the patient or the family about this situation?
Well, if there's somebody around that cares for the cares for the person, sometimes they'll step up to the plate and arrange for caretakers to come in a certain number of hours a day, or individuals to check on them on a regular basis. And they have these alert systems now, which I think help.
About that a little bit more. The you see that on TV, Life Alert or whatever the names are. So that's something that people should consider. If your parent or aunt is living alone, consider purchasing something like that.
Yeah, some type of system. There are many brands, I guess, MedAlert, so forth. I would point out there's been some concern about the quality of those different services, that particular kind of service.
So they should be selective and do their homework.
They should look into it, exactly. Okay. Make sure they're getting what they're supposed to be getting, and who's providing that service. So the other thing is an elderly couple together, that are together, where one member has been cared for by the other member. The patient may be taking care of his wife, who has severe arthritis and not able to prepare meals anymore, needs assistance to go to the bathroom and so forth. And then the spouse has an event.
Oh.
And a big, big league problem.
Right.
It's a major set of circumstances for both then. And unless some resources are available to help those kinds of situations, there's a lot of trouble too.
The Office of the Aging, Westmoreland County, has that resource. Do you find that to be helpful? Is it one of the recommendations you make to your clients, your patients?
Yeah, that's probably the most standard recommendation I have, is to at least contact Office of Aging and find out what they could offer to help. Unfortunately, elderly patients may not have the financial wherewithal to pay for a lot of home care, visitors, etc. And as a result, they struggle along with limited help until it becomes a disaster and one of them ends up having to be institutionalized or dying.
You have been listening to a conversation with Dr. Louis Catalano, a neurologist of many, many years here in the Westmoreland County area. This is Vince Quattrini signing off on the Legal Checkup for today. Just telling you that it's sponsored by my law firm of Quattrini Rafferty, which you can always reach by the website qrlegal.com or at 888-534-6016. Again, Dr. Catalano, thank you very much for spending time with me.
Thank you, Vince. Great to be here.